Big show for you here today. It is a big time preview of the running back class. Part one. This class is so good, we got to split it into two parts. Charles McDonald joins me to break down the top six running backs from this year's class. Ashton Jeanty, just how special is he and where does he stack up with some recent top 10 drafted players at the position? Amarian Hampton, we are both big fans of his game. The Ohio State backs, I mean, again, there's just so many top-level backs that could change your team's backfield coming up this year. Could be a great pick in your Dynasty rookie draft. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, March 27th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is... It's a hell of a day to talk ball because we are squarely in the middle of draft season. And joining me to do that is our good buddy here on our prospect preview series. It is Charles McDonald. Charles, what's going on, man? Should I do the performative, like, well, 1 month till the draft kind of like intro that I feel like every podcast is doing right now? Or should I just say, how the hell are you, man?
You can do the performative piece, and I'll say, oh my God, please hurry up. Hurry up, you know. Four more weeks, you know, we just got to get there and then we can breathe for a little bit. You know, it's funny, my friends who, you know, just watch football casually, they're like, what are you doing like this time of year? I'm like, dude, I'm working so much. Like, so much, you have no idea, so much. But we're almost free.
Dude, I have two thoughts on what you just said. One, not to like, I don't love doing the woe is us, like, because we have great jobs and stuff like that. But, you know, I had a friend text me the other day, a similar thing, like, it was like on a Thursday. Oh, come drink beer with us. We're watching March Madness or whatever. You know, there's no games on right now. You don't have any work to do. And I was so insulted that I didn't even answer the text. It's like how angry I was that you would dare say that. So I feel you on that. And the second thing is, it's funny. I don't want to talk about like the Russell Wilson or the Stephon Diggs news because we have a lot to cover here on the show today. But it did dawn on me last night as I was watching that like news come down or whatever. And people were like, well, see, this is really all a reaction to kind of what's probably going to happen in the draft and the whispers stuff. Like, damn, yo, we got like a month left. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. So it's the crushing reality of just how far we have to go to get to the draft. It is very apparent, which is good because a lot of work left to be done, a lot of prospects to chart, a lot of prospects to evaluate. But also, yes, we do have a long way to go.
We haven't even gotten to a Shedeur Sanders pro day yet, you know, so let's pace ourselves here. We still have at least one more hellstorm of takes to be unleashed before we get to April, because I think Shedeur and Travis Hunter are going to work out the same day. So just buckle in. I've seen some people, some fan bases tilting already, but man, you can't be tilting in March, man. Just take it easy. We're all on this ride together. And over the next month, we're going to learn a lot about how the league is going to shape up for the fall.
One hellstorm of takes feels conservative. We're not going to do any hellstorms of takes here. We're going to do some serious analysis on our draft deep dive series. Today we are covering the running back class. We're actually splitting it into two parts because this running back class is very good. It's very deep. We're going to decide, obviously, on this show just how deep it is. So we're going to do part one here. Today we're kind of focused on the consensus top 5 to 6 players. Next week we're going to look at the other running backs that you need to know for deeper into day 2, day 3 in the draft. Like I said, this is a big time running back class. Dwayne McFarland pointed this out on the show a couple of episodes ago. You know, don't be settled if you're some like mid-tier veteran that's hanging on to a starting job right now, because you could have a young guy potentially coming in to unseat you. And we got to try to figure out who those best backs are. So let's waste no more time, Charles. Let's jump into it here on this running back class. And let's start at the very top. But before we kind of talk Ashton Jeanty, I do just want your feelings on the draft class as a whole in terms of the running backs. Is it top heavy? Is it deep? Is it the best draft class ever? Like, let's put this thing into context.
Whew, best draft class ever. I don't even know if I have like a frame of reference for that anymore. Because we've had like Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs go round one. But in terms of best class ever, I mean, it's got to be one of the more talented classes coming in that I can remember. Just starting off with Jeanty, Amarian Hampton is someone who might be able to sneak into round one with when you start looking at his profile and what he's been able to do, not only at UNC, but also through the draft process. Excuse me. The Ohio State guys. I mean, like you said, we're splitting this into two podcasts, so there's a lot of guys to get through. I don't know if it's like maybe quite as, you know, like where, I guess it depends like where you frame Jeanteen to compare to like Bijan and other guys who have gone top 10. But I think when you're looking at the depth like past him, it's probably one of the more stacked classes that we've seen in recent memories. I think there's a lot of guys here who could end up being like real parts of running back rotations. And I don't even think we're going to get to all of them today. I think there's, you know, a handful of guys that project as potential starters in the NFL. So this is a good year to need a back. You know, it's a quality O-line class, quality back class. I think we're going to get back to doing what football's all about. Running the ball, yeah, hurting people.
It's a grinder. It's a grinder draft, that's for sure. I like. Even as a receiver guy, I love to see that. I mean, there's so many rushing ecosystems out there that are so fun, but also need a little bit of juice added. And I feel like that's what this running back class comes to. I want to do a little exercise comparing Ashton Jeanteen to kind of the top prospects here in a little bit. But when I was kind of putting together the players to stack Jeanteen up with, just looking back at recent draft classes, the one that stands out to me is the 2017 draft class, where ironically, the first player drafted from it was Leonard Fournette, fourth overall, which certainly wasn't fourth overall worthy. But Christian McCaffrey at eighth overall. And then you had Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, Deontay Foreman, James Conner. I mean, there were just the 49ers took their usual like running back pick that they burned in flames with Joe Williams in the fourth round. But like even Tariq Cohen came out of that class. He was a useful player for Chicago. Jamal Williams was a useful player for both the Packers and especially the Lions. He led the league in touchdowns 1 year. Like even there, again, there are guys in this class, like Marlon Mack had a moment in the NFL. And I feel like that maybe does it sort of compare to that type of group.
Wow. That's a draft Twitter legend right there.
Bro, I had a fantasy team with Marlon Mack, you know, once, and it like again there was a couple of moments where it was good, and then he tore the Achilles, and there was actually a couple of torn Achilles in this draft class between Connor, between Foreman and Marlon Mack.
Yeah, that's a good one. That was the one I was thinking of, but honestly, once I got to like McCaffrey, Kamara, I couldn't remember who else was in that class. But that's a loaded one. We're not gonna see two guys go in the top 10. This year, I mean, that's rare. I mean, even what happened with Bijan and Gibbs, like both of them going top 12, that is probably going to be something that's maybe an anomaly in this era of the NFL. But you still might get two first round running backs. We'll get to all of it. But of course, this thing is headlined by Jeanteen from Boise State, who ran for like 4 million yards, something like that, 4,000 touchdowns.
Yeah, two more names from that running back 2017 class that I neglected. Aaron Jones in the fifth round and Chris Carson in the seventh round. So again, that was just a really good class that like several productive running backs even came late. So we'll see as we get into the deeper ranges of this class if that stacks up with 2017. But let's start at the top here with Ashton Jeanteen, who you mentioned it. I mean, the production is just absolutely absurd. I think I've said this on the show before, but you know, when I pull up like True Media to look at these running back prospects, I almost, when I'm looking at him, I'm like, did I make a mistake here? Like from a filter perspective, am I looking at two seasons worth of production? Because he carried the ball last season for 374 yards, 374 times, 2,601 yards, 7 yards per carry, 29 rushing touchdowns. In terms of just what he did after contact, he did like a whole season's worth of production just rushing after contact because he averaged 5.25 yards after contact per carry. So, Charles, this guy, from a production standpoint, absolutely absurd. When you watch him play, even when he goes against like better competition, because I think if there are Ashton Jeanteen haters, because you've pointed this out, there has to be like haters for everybody now. We can't just like football players. Somebody's out there hating. There always is. You know, Jeanteen deniers be like, oh, he played Boise State, like he's running against these Mountain West defenses, whatever. Even when you see him go against good competition, you can see all the good traits that he puts together.
Yeah, he's a special runner. It's kind of just strange to almost watch him run because it almost seems like he's made of like a different matter than the defensive players trying to tackle him. because especially when guys just try to tackle him straight up, they just bounce off of him. I think the contact bounce that he has is really, it's unbelievable. I think it's what is going to set him apart immediately in the NFL. Like just the ability to stay up and not get tackled and kind of play through some of the bigger players that are trying to bring him down. Because it wasn't just, you know, linebackers and safeties that had problem bringing it down. Like sometimes it was defensive linemen that struggled to get him on the ground too. It's just, there's a whole lot of strength and power packed into his frame. You know, you listed at 5'8", 211. He's, you know, every bit of that when it comes to just how built he is on the field and how he's carrying the ball. And I understand maybe some workload concerns about what happened last year with Boise State. I mean, he ended the season with almost 400 carries. And, you know, by the end of the season, they were giving him the ball, you know, 30, 35 times a game because if you're a college coach, why wouldn't you? You know, Dirk Cotter was their offensive coordinator last season. You know, he was there towards the tail end of like the Michael Turner experience in Atlanta. So, yeah, just
Dirk Cotter, baby.
Yeah, Dirk Cotter, Boise State OC. Just keep handing Jenny the rock. But I think what might set him apart, because, you know, every once in a while you have one of these players that can just take the workload and they just keep chugging along and you're just kind of surprised they can keep going. I think he might be one of those guys because there were games last year where he would get hurt, you know, he would get dinged up and he's only out for a couple of plays. And for other players, they look like more severe injuries, but he's back. And then they're giving the ball 20 more times. He looks explosive. He looks good. I think, you know, not to whittle it down to just a catchphrase, but I think Jenty is really just built different than a whole lot of running backs that we've seen in the last few years. I don't really get too concerned about the top end speed. I think he's plenty fast enough to break big chunks if he can break tackles, which I don't really see why he wouldn't be able to in the NFL.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get some testing from him at his pro day, because obviously he did not work out at the combine because top prospects just don't work out at the combine at this point anymore. That is what it is. We belabored that point when we were actually in Indianapolis. But yeah, I mean, he's, again, super impressive player. You mentioned just the ability to constantly stay upright, to like fight through just run after run after run. I think he's a guy that you could imagine, like, let's just say hypothetically he goes to the Raiders at the 6th overall pick. They have nothing in their backfield right now other than Raheem Mostert, who I think is pretty well towards the end of his career. You know, kind of became a bit of a goal line merchant the last couple of years with the Miami Dolphins. But you could just imagine Jenty just every week we're saddling him up for 20 carries, which is a rarity at this point in today's NFL. But Chip Kelly's offense, they want to run the hell out of the ball. I would imagine, again, just he could be that type of tempo setting runner because he can eat a lot of volume and consistently get yards after contact.
Yeah, this is this to me, this is kind of like the, I don't know if it will have the same effect here, but how you saw last year where Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, they were kind of like the last pieces to their offense, yeah. And that really raised the floor for them. Obviously, when you look at this, you look at where the Raiders depth chart is, it's not, I don't know how much you're raising the floor here because you still have some work to do at wide receiver, but you know, you're starting off with a credible quarterback, a quarterback who can work in adverse situations. And Geno Smith, you have one of the best passing game weapons in the league in Brock Bowers, who was a monster last year. And then you have Ashton Jenty. I mean, that's a start. Probably still need to upgrade the offensive line. And when you go back and look at where the Raiders were last year, for a good chunk of the season, they had one of the worst rushing games in NFL history. I think they had played a little better towards the end of the season, but to start off, it was really, really bad. So I don't know if Jenty is the fix all for their woes, but it's not like you could really complain about Jenty being on your favorite team if you're a Raiders fan. That's how I would say that.
No, it's funny. You look at just again the idea of taking him 6th overall, like, and just with this Raiders team. Number one, I think he's worth taking 6th overall, probably in any draft, but certainly in this draft where there's not as many blue chip talents as there were in last year's draft class. But I look at the Raiders and I'm like, man, what's worse, their hole at the running back position or their hole at the X receiver position? Because, I mean, look again. Brock Bowers is great. Jacoby Myers is one of the more underrated receivers in the NFL. But like, we've got Trey Tucker and DJ Turner scheduled to take like major snaps for this team. You cannot be having that. Like that, especially for a team like Chip Kelly's offense, they want to run the ball. It really helps if you can get guys out of the box, man. Like, and I don't think Trey Tucker or any of these guys, no matter what their 40 times are really scaring teams. So, and you know, Tet McMillan's the top X receiver prospect in this class. He's a vertical threat as like a ball winner, but he's not a speed guy either. So again, just this is what teams will be doing when it comes to Ashton Jeanty in the top 10, weighing him against like more quote premium positions, but he might just end up being like the top ranked player on the board. In terms of your big board, Charles, like where does he rank amongst all prospects in this class?
Ooh, I think I had him like 3, I want to say.
Yeah.
You know, in the top 3 or top 4, because this is where the running back debate kind of gets interesting to me in terms of positional value. Like if you're at the top of the draft and you see players start going off the board, you kind of have like this like two schools of thought to me. It's like, okay, well, we know we could possibly find a running back later on who could start and be a contributor for our offense. But at some point, like, you're just passing him up for worse prospects, you know, which is, I think, is an interesting inflection point, like, when you get to the actual draft. Because when you're the Raiders and you're sitting at 6, I think it's easily defensible to say, you know, we think Ashton Jeanty is the second best player in the draft, or maybe we think he's the most complete offensive player in the draft. I think that's a defensible opinion for you to have. So when you get to 6, if he's still on the board, I don't really think it's a horrible process to take him there. I just don't know if their offensive line is really in a spot where, you know, they can hold together something like this. Because, you know, I think Colton Miller's a good starter. And the rest of the guys, they could use some work. But I even think when you go back to Jeanty's game against Penn State in the college football playoff, I thought he played a good game. I know he came back with, it was like 2-point-something yards per carry, really just fighting for his life. But they got their ass kicked up front, and I thought he did a good enough job to mitigate that and give himself a chance. So we'll see what happens when it's a little bit more level playing field in the NFL. But still, the Raiders, you know, they're an interesting team. I would say the Raiders, they definitely feel like they're being run by someone who's in their 70s and might not be doing this for very long.
Yeah, that Penn State game that Charles mentioned, he had 30 carries, 104 yards, 3.5 yards per carry for Ashton Jeanty, which obviously was the lowest mark of his season. 3.9 was the previous low mark against UNLV. But besides that, it's like 4.8. You know, he consistently is over like 6 in these games. So that was definitely the low mark of the season. Best team that he played. But like you mentioned, Charles, it's just, if you're going to get your ass kicked up front by players that are more talented than you, that is going to happen. And that doesn't always reflect on the running back. So just on the Jeanty point about like the big board, you know, you've got him ranked 3rd overall. Behind him is like Abdul Carter. You still have Tet McMillan as the 5th prospect, Will Campbell, Mason Graham, you know, Cam Ward, but obviously he's going higher than that. But like, once we get to like Tyler Warren at 9, Colson Loveland at 10, Jalen Walker at 11, that's the thing. Like once we get down to there, even like Micah Williams, the edge from Georgia, you have at 12. Like at some point, you're just weighing worse prospects against the guy that for you and for many other people will be like a top 5 consensus player in the class. So even if he gets past the Raiders, I don't know if this is like a nightmare scenario for Dynasty, but I could even see a team like the Saints, because they're just the weirdest team in the league, at the 9th overall pick being like, well, you know what? We want to win right now because we're running back our bad team from last year for whatever reason. Let's take Ashton Jeanty at the 9th overall pick, which again, my God, the tears, the weeping and gnashing of teeth that Dynasty Twitter would have after that. If that happened in April, in the draft, that would be a disaster class. But like, that's why I just think he's ultimately going to end up going very, very high, because you're just weighing him against worse players at some point. So are there any like tangible weaknesses you can point into his game, like the receiving production profile? Is there anything of that nature that might have you kind of pause even for just a half second with Ashton Jeanty?
The receiving stuff is interesting to me, because I think we've seen this before, where you have this guy who was just such a singular force at running back. you almost go like, why would I throw it to you when I could just hand you the ball every single time?
Yeah.
And sure. I don't think that that means that you can or can't catch, because I think we've seen even guys like Todd Gurley in the past wasn't always used as like a big time receiver for Georgia. But when he got those opportunities, he made the most of them. And then you get to the NFL and you see he's just kind of an all world type of beast. So I think, you know, maybe the receiving stuff is something he's going to have to get used to. But I wouldn't say it's something that he can't do. I think, you know, when you get to weaknesses in his game, it's kind of nitpicking. But I think, you know, sometimes, and I think this is really true versus Penn State, you know, you fight a little bit too hard to try and get some extra yards. You end up exposing the ball and having some fumble issues. But also, you know, you have to just scale everything to 374 carries that he had last year. So I don't really see a reason to be scared here, unless you're just like the play style. We're not sure if that's going to hold up long-term, because he is someone who's like just not afraid of contact. When you see him bounce off of guys, he really has no need to be afraid of contact. The long speed, I don't really care about. I think he's fast enough to break some big chunks, and he obviously did in college. So, you know, just maybe taking a little bit more care of himself is what I would say, but that's a nitpick. It's a pretty small nitpick, I'll say.
To your point about why would I throw you the ball when I can just hand you the ball? Like, typically, you know, the passing game is more efficient. You get more yards per pass attempt than you do per rush attempt. He averaged 6 yards per reception as a receiver last year. He averaged 7 yards per carry last year, which is just, that is usually not the ratio of that. Usually the yards per carry is higher. So, is lower. So again, Ashton Jeanty, great player. Obviously, in this draft class, before we move on from him, I just want to play kind of like a quick comparison here. Like, let's stack him up versus recent top running back draft picks. So I've got every first round pick here at running back from, well, there wasn't any last year, obviously. So 2022 back to 2015. So Bijan Robinson, 8th overall in 2022. Who's a better prospect, Ashton Jeanty or Bijan Robinson?
Oof. I think I go Bijan just because he's a little faster.
Okay. So that was a better draft, though, 22. I would say at the top, it was a little bit of a better draft. But again, 8th overall, I can totally see Jeanty being in that range. Jahmyr Gibbs, 12th overall in that same draft. Who's a better prospect?
Jeanty, because I feel like I can give him 300 carries in the season, and we can have that be a viable plan. You know, because Gibbs is great, but, you know, I think the presence of David Montgomery really helps him. When Gibbs when Jeanty can kind of be that guy on his own.
Yeah, like Jahmyr Gibbs is one of the best players in the league. He's one of the best backs in the league. Would he be this guy on every team? I don't know. You know, this is a very unique Lions rushing ecosystem, but I think he's a great player. I don't think we have to entertain Josh Jacobs, Najee Harris types from like the 20s. In other draft classes. So unless you've got like any objections there, I think we can keep it moving. Saquon Barkley, 2nd overall in 2018. Who's a better prospect, Jeanty or Saquon?
Saquon. Yeah, that's the freak show. Because Saquon, he was running. I don't know if he hit 4.3 or if he was like right around the 4.41 range, but he was 240. You know, at the combine doing that. Like that's what always blows me away about Saquon is like he's playing like 230 plus. And he's still breaking all these runs and doing all that stuff. So, Jeanty, not quite that level of athletic phenom, but which is fine. You know, not many people are.
Yeah. And by the way, like Saquon might still run a 4.4 at his current age, which is just what a freak show he is. And that was a class that did have a bunch of quarterbacks that went early. Yeah. And whether it was the correct decision or not, Dave Gettleman still took Saquon Barkley at the 2nd overall pick because that is how truly special he was, which obviously spawned the famous him typing on the computer meme. Dave Gettleman, no shortage of Dave Gettleman's actually going to come up here pretty soon, because in the 2017 draft, Leonard Fournette was the 4th overall pick in 2017. Jeanty or Leonard Fournette in terms of prospects? Obviously, Fournette kind of had a whatever career, but as a prospect, who do you think was better?
Jeanty, just because Jeanty can create a little bit more on his own. You know, I've gone back and watched the Leonard Fournette stuff after he, I don't know if flames out the right word, just didn't live up to the 4th overall pick. Because he did have a pretty nice career when it was all said and done. But, you know, when you go back and watch some of the LSU games with Fournette, there's just so many wide open runways where it's just, you know, you're not even being tested on, you know, maybe making a cut in space or making somebody miss. You're just getting a full runway. And then you're at the second level, you're 240 running, you know, in the 4.4s. And that's impossible for college defensive backs. But, you know, I think Gentry, he's in a spot where he can create a little bit more, break a little bit more tackles, a little more agile. So I'll take him.
Okay, what about Christian McCaffrey in that same draft? Like I said, Dave Gettleman's going to come up here. He also drafted that two back-to-back seasons as a general manager, drafted a running back in the top 10. That is beautiful stuff.
Yeah, I remember when he was when Dave was the general manager with the Giants when I was covering them, and he would be like, "Yeah, you know, I drafted those guys early and they're pretty good, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I guess they are."
Yeah, the teams just don't win a lot of games.
Yeah, but you got me there. Saquon and Christian, definitely really, really good players. You got me there, Dave. But I think I would go with McCaffrey here just because there was no holes really in terms of like what you had to be concerned about. You know, no questions about the receiving. You were getting like a lot of punt return stuff too. Obviously, the running was crazy. I think I'll take McCaffrey, just a little more well-rounded.
He's a bit of like a different entity too because of what he presented as a receiving mismatch, which I mean, as much as I like the pass catching ability of any of these guys, like Bijan, I still think could be a little further maximized there. Saquon obviously has been a high level receiver at times. Gibbs, you know, was drafted, I think, primarily to be a pass catching asset for the Lions, but then he's just been so good as a runner. McCaffrey's like in a different category than any of those guys, because you could truly, when especially early on in his career, line him up in the slot and be like a real deal mismatch. So last two guys I'll throw out here, put Ashton Gentry versus like Zeke Elliott, fourth overall in 2016, Todd Gurley, 10th overall in 2015. Like if you stack those three guys up, how would you rank them?
Maybe just like a hair below those guys. I do think Zeke is, because I was a big girly guy that year. The size, the speed, I don't know. I couldn't move him below Zeke because I was just too obsessed with like just the horsepower aspect of Gurley. So I think I would have him probably, I'd have GT tied with Zeke, you know, with a hair behind Gurley, but that's really just like physical profile stuff, you know, because with Gurley, man, he was 235 for turning kicks to the house at Georgia. So that was just kind of a different beast than not just GT, but what a lot of guys are. And yeah, Gurley is one of the saddest like what if careers, because his knees just failed. He was retired and out of the league by like 26, which is crazy considering how it looked when he started.
Oh yeah, I mean his run like 2017, 2018 in the Sean McVay Rams offense, like, talk about ability as a receiver. Like, it's not the same as Christian McCaffrey, and obviously he was great as a runner on some of those outside zone concepts, but it was just like Jared Goff had a free 8 yards basically anytime he threw Todd Gurley the football. And like usually it was more than that, obviously, but just like, oh, nothing's downfield. Like, let me just dump it off to like a little swing thing out of the backfield with Todd Gurley, and he's taking that thing like, again, 8, 9, 10 yards. So he was truly like a cheat code. But this is the type of prospect Gentry is he stacks up with some of these guys that have been drafted in the top 10, top 12. You know, maybe he's not the freak show that like Saquon Barkley was, or, you know, maybe he's not as explosive as Bijan Robinson, but he certainly is in this tier of players. And ultimately, I do wonder, like, if we didn't get any athletic testing data on him, maybe that does sort of push him up a little bit. I mean, it doesn't matter as much as running back as it does in other positions, but like just confirming some more freak show ability for him, maybe it does inch him up a little further in this list, because I think he has a unique ability to absorb a lot of punishment, and that's going to be great for any team that wants to draft him extremely high in the draft. Let's take our first break, and then when we come back, we'll talk through some of the other prospects ranked behind Ashton Gentry right after this. All right, we are back. We talked through Ashton Gentry, the consensus top running back in this class. I don't feel like I've even seen any sort of weird, even if there are some Gentry, like maybe deniers in the comment sections or things like that. I haven't seen any evaluator do the hipster thing. I'm sure it's coming. We'll get there. Do the hipster thing of ranking somebody ahead of Ashton Jeanty. It seems like he is a consensus running back one, but there's a lot of other good backs in this class. So let's talk through some of those players, starting with kind of the guy who seems like he's cemented himself as the consensus running back two, which is Amarian Hampton of the University of North Carolina. Charles, I know you and I talked about this guy at the combine. We're both big fans. Tell me what's the best parts of his game.
Oh, I don't know how to describe it, but he's built for it. You know, he looks mm-hmm. and moves like an NFL running back. I honestly watched him in not in passing, but I watched like maybe a game or two before the combine, and I knew he was a good athlete. But then I went back and watched after the combine he had, where at 221 pounds. 1.53 10-yard split, which is crazy, 4.46 40-yard dash, 38-inch vertical, almost 11 feet on the broad jump. Like, this is obviously the profile of an explosive athlete. And the more I watch, it's there. It's really there. And it's not just, I don't think he's just all athlete, no in the vision or anything like that. Yeah. I think he's actually like a pretty polished running back as well. So I think the more that you talk to people, especially after the combine happened, hey, is this a guy that could go in the first round of the draft? And it's possible. I think when you start looking at some of the the profile he's put together, you have obviously the production last year on a pretty bad UNC team. Yeah, I remember UNC, they gave up 70 points to James Madison last year. They were down by like 50 at halftime at home against James Madison. So this was not a good team.
James Madison, my God, what are we talking about?
Dude, yeah, they let James Madison score 50 points in the first half at home. At home.
JMU up the street here in Virginia. Not exactly a football powerhouse university, right. Folks.
So that's kind of what he was dealing with last year, and still he was able to be just a workhorse for that offense. And then he goes to the combine, blows it up. I think he's just checking a whole lot of boxes. And I really like his game. It's explosive, it's smooth. I think he's got a little bit more agility and elusiveness maybe than given credit for. I just think he's a really, really complete running back.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. Is he's a complete guy that it's really well said. He checks a lot of boxes for me as well. Like, he's a big back. He's got great balance. Those are the type of running backs I really like to watch. They're the type of running backs I usually almost always fall for. And he's somebody that, in terms of yards after contact, 4.35, he's up there with like all of the guys that carried the ball a ton. Like, in terms of players that had over 200 carries last year in the FBS, he's third in terms of yards after contact per carry. Ashton Jeanty is, of course, number one. Number two is Caleb Johnson of Iowa, who we might talk about this episode. I think we might talk about next episode. But again, a productive player, 5.9 yards per carry overall, just an explosive player who – I think he's a grinder back, but he's got some juice to him as well. Like, is he the most explosive back in the world? I don't know about that. But again, I think he can rip those big runs, especially on like gap concept runs to me. Like, I don't know if he's going to land with this team because they signed Najee Harris in free agency, but he would be like a tremendous fit with what the Chargers want to do. Blow open gaps, give him clear lanes, and just have him mash people in the open field once he gets to the second and third level. That's the type of running back I think he is. And I will say, Charles, from a receiving profile perspective, almost 10 yards per reception. Like, I think he can be, I'm not saying he's about to be Todd Gurley, but what we just talked about with Gurley in the first segment, somebody that you just throw like a swing pass to out of the backfield and he can pick you up some additional yards there as well.
Yeah, the thing is about Najee Harris. Man, I hope that Najee Harris signing doesn't stop them from adding like another legit back. That yeah, so especially no. with how much they want to run the ball.
I don't think it will.
You never know, though. We talk about fake Pat Ricard at the combine, so they might settle. They really might settle there. But I think that if you're in the back half of the first round, and like I said earlier, this is kind of like the range where maybe you can get that effect that Derrick Henry or Josh Jacobs or Saquon Barkley, to some degree had last year, mm-hmm. where you're looking at your offense, you're like, oh man, we got some pieces here. We got some nice players on the offensive line. Maybe we got a quarterback. oh, shoot, maybe a top-end running back would really raise the floor for us. And I think that that's a sweet spot for him. I think at one point we had him mocked to the Commanders. We've also had him mocked to the Denver Broncos. So even, you know, if you're looking at the Broncos offense and where he fits in, their running game was, you know, solid last year. It had some ups, it had some downs. I think they finished close to maybe like around the league average unit in terms of success rate and EPA. But I also do think that their running backs left some juice to squeeze last year out there on the field. So just getting someone maybe who's a little bit more legitimate runner. Obviously, your Bo Nix is on a rookie contract. You see him play. You know he's competent enough to at least start in the NFL. This could be a good running mate for him just to kind of solidify things maybe while they try to figure out what they want the rest of their receiving room outside of Cortland Sutton to look like.
Yeah, I agree with you that Denver makes a lot of sense with what they want to do. You know, Sean Payton likes to run a lot of multiple concepts. I think Hampton, as much as I like him in a gap scheme system, I think he could run zone, especially outside zone stuff. He's got some juice to hit the edge and like make players miss in the backfield too, even if like you bust something from their offensive line's so good. They're so assignment sound, everything like that. But even if there's like a bust on a zone run and someone meets him in the backfield, like he's got enough moves to make you miss and keep it moving. So I agree. Like Denver, we're going to talk a lot about them next week on the pod because they're one of the teams that will fit our next draft series. But they're looking for weapons. Could you see a team even like Chicago at 10? Like, let's say Genty goes inside the top 10. Could you see a team like Chicago? Again, we know what Ben Johnson saw in Detroit with a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs and how like adding that juice elevated a running game. They added to the offensive line. They added to the defensive line. I think they've set themselves up to kind of do whatever they want at the 10th overall pick. Maybe it's rich, but again, we're starting to weigh some like mid-tier edge rushers and stuff like that. Could you see a team like Chicago selling themselves enough on Hampton to be like, let's make a really aggressive move and take him there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that'll be the weirdest thing, only because especially this year, I think once you get past maybe like a top six or seven players, I would imagine the rankings are just all over the place. You know, once you get past like Travis Hunter, Mason Graham, Will Campbell, you know, guys in that range, I have to guess everything's all over the place. So I wouldn't be surprised, all that surprised, if they decide to take him there. I think it's a more defensible pick now with the offensive line upgrades that they've made. You know, if Jonah Jackson and Drew Dahlman play out for them and Joe Thuney can continue like his little Iron Man streak, that's a quality offensive line, especially with Darnell Wright over there at right tackle. So it wouldn't be a situation, hopefully, because we were saying the last year, it wouldn't be a situation where, you know, he wouldn't have anyone blocking for him. And hopefully, you know, Caleb Williams will be able to get moving a little bit easier, maybe with a star running back. But I actually think Hampton and Swift, that's not a bad little 1-2 combo, because I don't know. I think Swift might be past the days where you need to be giving him all those carries, but still as a spellback, I think he has some value.
Yeah, we'll see if Ben Johnson can just commit to actually liking him after being a big part of the reason I think that he got pushed out of Detroit previously. So I like Hampton a lot. I think he is a guy who I think he's going in the first round at this point. I'd be a little surprised if he fell out of the first round just because there are so many, as you mentioned, running back needy teams in the back half of round one. Let's talk through some other guys who maybe could be early round two, maybe could sneak into the first round. And let's start with Travion Henderson out of Ohio State, who he's a riot, man. He's a very good player, a very explosive player. What do we think of Travion Henderson out of Ohio State?
He's a fun player. You know, he's smooth. Like, I think he's kind of like a glider back a little bit. But he can also be explosive, you know, up the middle of the defense when they do give him carries there. But I really think some of his best stuff comes on outside zone. It's not always necessarily like him reading it out and, you know, making like a cutback or something like that. Like, I think his best stuff sometimes comes from when he gets like string it out a little bit and just go find that gap on the edge and accelerate through. I don't know if I view him as like a leadoff back, you know, someone that you're giving 250 carries to, but as like a nice little change of pace guy. Like, I think we're starting to get into that realm here with Henderson. I still do think he has a lot of value. You know, I don't, it's kind of funny like watching him run, because I like the top end speed, but it sometimes it feels like it takes him a little bit to get there. I thought that Chip Kelly did a great job kind of scheming him up and giving him looks where he can kind of be shot out of a cannon. But once he gets going, that's a really nice player to have. And sometimes, you know, even when they're down by the goal line, he's got a little ability to make people miss. But I think like in the open field for like outside zone teams, that's where he's going to have a lot of value in the draft.
I love this Aaron Jones comparison that we're showing on the screen here because, yeah, like now Aaron Jones has been a lead back at times in his career, but there's also obviously been injury concerns with that. But like Aaron Jones as a spell back, like as you mentioned, that's like ideal, right? Because he's so explosive. You mentioned Travion Henderson working on outside zone runs. I think that Aaron Jones is like one of the better outside zone runners in the league. Like you get him off tackle, he's going to consistently get you 5+ yards and potentially more than that if you can get him to the second level. Again, a fast player, but maybe not like the most elusive in the world. And then also as a receiver, like Travion Henderson, 30 targets, 27 catches last year, 10.5 yards per reception. Like he, again, I think he's somebody that is not maybe in the, certainly the Jahmyr Gibbs mold necessarily, or the Christian McCaffrey mold or anything like that, where let's figure out creative ways where we could line him up in the slot or any of that nonsense. I'm sure we'll get those headlines in OTAs because we always do. Yeah. And then we get to the season and it never happens. But like, again, as somebody that is catching swings and screens and like little check down routes out of the backfield, I could see him, and this matters obviously from a fantasy perspective, he's going to catch like 40+ passes a year in the right offensive system. Even if he's not the quote lead back, he could still be a very valuable player by doing that for an offense.
Yeah. He's like a perfect, maybe a 1B or a strong 2, I think. Or maybe if you just want to go like running back by committee approach, this is probably a pretty valuable player to have. I think he's probably pretty specific for teams that run zone looks, but you know, it's a lot of teams in the NFL. So I don't really view that as a knock. You know, it's just more of like fitting where you want to go. And I think, you know, I don't remember if it was in Indianapolis or if it was a recent podcast we did where you were just like, yeah, we just kind of got to wait and see what team he ends up on. I think that this is the one of those guys where the fit is really going to matter for Henderson at the next level.
Oh yeah, all the analysis we're doing right now is totally couched by if they go to the wrong team and stuff, especially at running back. Like, who really cares? So yeah, definitely that is true in this case. I don't know if he makes sense. I don't know if he makes sense with this team just because they kind of already have maybe like a poor man's version of this player. But like the Steelers with Arthur Smith were the second most percentage of zone run schemes last year, percentage of zone runs. We know that Arthur Smith wants to hit those like outside zone runs and things like that. Najee Harris was a terrible fit for it. Jaylen Warren, probably a better fit for it. And he might, again, be like the poor man's version of a Travion Henderson. So maybe there's a little bit of like redundancy there. Maybe you want like more of a grinder back. But at the same time, man, like if you're trying to get big plays in the run game, which the Steelers, I thought, conceptually had a fine run game last year. There was just like no big playability because like that's not the type of Najee Harris back that you had back there. So that's the type of team I think, like if he landed in Pittsburgh, wide open depth chart, and then I have a second round pick, they only have a first round pick, so maybe this doesn't really make sense, but wide open depth chart, something like that, that would make sense. In terms of other teams that run a lot of, there's a lot of zone running teams out there. So I agree with you. I think like he lands in a spot like that, we could be talking about him, you know, maybe even potentially as the second most valuable back from a production standpoint in this class.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the Steelers, they're kind of an interesting spot, but I do like the, like if you're going to fit it with Jaylen Warren, it's not a bad spot for him. You know, it is kind of funny that they're in a spot where like, oh man, you know, offensive line's gonna be healthier. We invest a lot in it. Traded for DK Metcalf. We only really need one more running back to kind of set this thing off. But who's the quarterback? I guess it's gonna be Aaron. That doesn't really solve anything for next year, most likely. But hey, Steelers, they live one year at a time. I think Henderson will let them keep doing that.
I'll throw out Dallas too. They were sixth in percentage of zone runs last year, and they had 3.87 yards per carry on those plays, which was a bottom 10 number in the NFL according to fantasy points data. So, and obviously they don't have Mike McCarthy there anymore, but I think they're generally going to keep a lot of the same bones of that offense. So they signed a lot of like Javonte Williams, Miles Sanders, whatever. Like maybe Javonte Williams can do some of that grinder carry nonsense for them and leave all the fun stuff for Travion Henderson. I think actually that could be a really fun fit for a guy like Travion Henderson as well. Again, productive offense. I could see him working as a pass catcher. So that's these type of teams, if he lands there, Henderson could really be cooking as like a post-draft riser in your dynasty drafts and things like that. But let's talk about the other Ohio State running back, Charles, because he's not the only product from that school. Quinshon Judkins is the other running back, which... I mean, Quinshon Judkins sounds like how he plays is the analysis. Like he sounds like a dirty work back, and he is definitely the grinder dirty work guy of these two Ohio State products, Charles.
Oh, yeah. He'll run you over now. And it's funny because he's still explosive. But I think just like a first few steps, I think he's more explosive than Henderson is. And obviously once he gets to the second level, I think he deals with contact a little bit better, but I don't know if it's quite like a thunder and lightning approach here, because Judkins is certainly capable of ripping off big plays himself, but it was definitely clear like which running back here was going to be more punishing, which one was going to have to break more tackles. And that was Judkins. You know, I thought the combine kind of backed up what I saw on tape. Like the first few steps are really explosive. He jumped out the gym. He had a nice 10-yard split. I don't really have maybe too many knocks. You know, I do find it a little curious. Like when he's off and running to the edge, there's a lot of times where he's still like stiff arming someone at the goal line or stiff arming someone as he turned the corner. Maybe he's not quite the longest, like the fastest guy with long speed, but he still did run in like the low 4.4s at the combine. He had the 10-yard split. I don't think there are too many concerns about the athleticism. Maybe if you're looking at it from a standpoint of what would stop him, maybe this is the guy where the running style would get in the way a little bit, because he doesn't, like especially in the middle of the field, he doesn't try to shy away from contact. But still, I think this is a guy that could end up being a starting running back for a team, like a real deal starting running back. I just think he can maybe carry a little bit and do a little bit more as a runner than Travion Henderson can. Because I think Henderson's more of not a change of pace back, but, you know, part of a committee. But Judkins, I think, has a profile more of someone that you can end up giving, you know, 200 plus carries to over a season.
194 carries last year for Quinshon Judkins, converted 61.5% of his third down rushes into a first down. So, like, I think that's the type of player he is, you know, a guy who can keep it moving for you, keep you on schedule. But I agree with you that, like, when I watched him, there was more big playability maybe than you might have thought with a guy like Quinshon Judkins, who I do think is the grinder back of the two guys if we're comparing them. But, like, I've seen him sort of painted as the David Montgomery to Travion Henderson's Jahmyr Gibbs, if we're kind of using an NFL comparison. I mean, I think David Montgomery is an awesome player who just breaks tackles. He's such a smart runner. And I think Judkins is a smart runner as well. But I feel like Judkins has more explosive ability than even a guy like David Montgomery, who was a third round pick in his NFL draft. Like I could see Judkins being a clear cut second round pick. Like we talked about Travion Henderson and the type of schemes and maybe some teams that would fit him. If you're thinking of a place where Judkins could land and immediately grab a big role, do you have any kind of like system fits, teams, anything like that?
I kind of think New England would be a fun fit. If you could get him, you know, in round two, I don't know if you want to take him at the top of round two, but maybe if he slips to round three, I kind of like that spot for them, because they needed to get some more out of the running back room. They need some more juice. I think they could still use, you know, potential long-term back to pair with Drake May. You know that Mike Vrabel teams, they're going to try and run the football. And if you think if you're going to have to be a team like New England that's going to operate like that, you probably need a little bit more talent at running back. I think another fun team to look at with them could honestly be could be Jacksonville, depending on what they decide to do with ETN for the long term. Maybe that's your new starting running back in Jacksonville once his contract expires. But, you know, they had a pretty shaky run game last year, too, for a good stretch of the season. So anywhere where you can get like a potential starting running back, also with some juice to go in for big plays, I think makes sense for Judkins.
I like that Jacksonville one a lot, because I think as we're talking, like, he definitely, again, is a big play guy, but if you're running a lot of like gap scheme stuff and you're just trying to hammer people, and like, as you said, this is the back who's going to run you over. That is a great fit there. Tampa Bay last year, even if, like, again, Liam Cohen comes from that Sean McVay outside zone world. Obviously we know McVay has transferred into more of like one of the most duo heavy teams in the league. The Bucs last year under Liam Cohen were eighth in terms of gap run rate. And obviously they were super effective on those plays. 11 touchdowns, 6.3 yards per carry on gap runs for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You imagine he's going to want to bring some of that. And I don't think, like, certainly Travis Etienne is definitely not stopping you from taking a running back. Even Tank Bigsby, maybe he's like more of a gap runner than anything else. But again, I don't think he's stopping you from taking a back there in the second round. New England also was very gap heavy last year. Yeah, no, of course not. I also think, like, again, this is probably a different system, and maybe it's not that fun, but the Browns want to run the ball and they don't have a running back right now. Like, Nick Chubb's not who he used to be. He's also still a free agent. Like, Jerome Ford's the running back. I was just talking about this with our friend Derek Klassen on the podcast earlier this week. Like, they want to, we're getting back to the Kevin Stefanski world. Like, we're going to run the ball through, you know, we're going to do under center play action, stuff like that. More of a traditional offense. Enough with this shotgun empty nonsense. Let's get back to heavy condensed formations. Okay. Well, who's the back? Who are you handing the ball to? If you're doing that, maybe Judkins at the top of the second round could be a potential fit there, even if it is a different type of system than what we were just outlining.
Yeah, I the more I think about it, I kind of like Judkins. If you're missing out on the Gentry and the Hampton, maybe that's where you find, you know, a starting running back on day two somewhere. Because even before this year, you know, like Nate, our friend Nate Tice, he had Judkins paired, projected as a potential first overall pick or round one pick coming into the year, because his tape at Ole Miss suggested that he could be someone that could be the explosive back moving over to Ohio State. And obviously he had the year they had, and he was a big part of their offense. And you know, with Chip Kelly, like you said before, when we're talking about the Raiders, going to get a lot of chances to run the ball. He had almost 200 carries, which is, that's a lot. I think when you paired, that's a lot. He had almost 200. I think Trampion had like another 150 to add. So, you know, they had their chances to run the ball, and I think that they did a good job, like, divvying up who's good at what. But I think the way they use Judkins maybe has a little cleaner fit for long-term, like, RB1 profile.
Yeah, Judkins, 194 carries, and Trevion was 144, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, it's just crazy rushing production from these Ohio State running backs, which is why they're going to go really high in this year's NFL draft. And like that, they're sort of, yeah, if you miss out on one of these early guys, definitely take a look at one of those two players. We're going to take our last break. We come back, we'll talk through more, two other running backs who could go pretty early in this year's NFL draft right after this. We are back. Let's talk through our final two backs that we're going to get to today in the kind of top six of this year's class. Let's start with Caleb Johnson out of Iowa, the apple of Andy Behrens' eye this year, I'm sure. Caleb Johnson, Charles, didn't have the combine that some of these other guys did, but you watch him play, and that's a pretty damn good running back right there.
Yeah, I like him a lot. Honestly, I think that this could be a diamond in the rough player. I don't think he's going to go in round one, or, you know, maybe not even round two. But the player that I think of when I watch him is Arian Foster. The way that they move to me is kind of uncanny. Especially when Iowa, as they do, get under center and they run like their outside zone stuff. The way that he's able to like he's gliding and setting up blocks at the same time and also being explosive, it really looks like what Arian Foster used to do back when he was at his peak with the Texans, where, you know, it never looked like Arian was breaking like one speed, but he was, the way he was able to set things up and glide at the same time, I think Caleb Johnson has a lot of that to his game. So Maybe that's a little bit too high on him. Arian Foster was an undrafted player who ended up having the career that he had. So, you know, you never know with these guys. But when he takes off on outside zone stuff and the way he reads it, and also you have a lot of tangible reps because Iowa does run under center stuff. You know, they are going to butt their head against the ball, head against the wall, which does give you a lot of good looks for offensive line and running back. And I think he had a lot of translatable plays that would suggest that maybe he can continue to do some of that in the NFL. I don't know if he's going to end up being like, you know, a 10-year starter, but hey, I think he could be a starter on a rookie deal for a team that needs help for a running back. Like if you're looking for someone to help take their like outside zone scheme to the next level, I think he's like perfectly suited for that.
Yeah, you said it perfectly there. And I love that Arian Foster comp. And obviously, Arian Foster dominated in a heavy outside zone run game with the Houston Texans under Gary Kubiak. So that makes perfect sense there. And yeah, just that's the great part about even if watching Iowa football, again, all apologies to Andy Behrens, even if watching Iowa football is not that fun, you do get a lot of translatable pro plays, especially from that running game, because it's under center, it's the heavy outside zone stuff, and he's such a perfect fit there. Like, yeah, is he going to rip off 60, 70 yard runs like maybe a Travion Henderson would or something like that? Is he going to have like, and he was second in terms of these running backs between Ashton Jeanty and Amarian Hampton, who had 200 carries last year in yards after contact per attempt. He's not necessarily like the same ferocious tackle breaker that a guy like Hampton is, but he's a smart runner who can get the edge and get you some big plays because I think he's got good vision in the outside zone world and stuff like that. We mentioned two other teams I've already mentioned in terms of like landing spots, Pittsburgh and Cleveland. If they're getting back to more of that under center running game stuff, they have 2 third round picks. Like he could be a guy that if they don't go running back early, maybe they add him to the mix in the third round. And like, I'm not saying he's going to be their next Nick Chubb or anything like that, but Nick Chubb was a second round pick and he just was their starting running back. And he was one of the best backs in the league at his peak. Again, I'm not saying he's necessarily going to be at that level, but man, he could be like a third round guy that they just say, hey, throughout the course of your rookie contract, you're kind of like our guiding force on offense because we don't know what the hell we're doing at quarterback right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think that's a fair place to have him pegged for his career. I'm starting to look at some of these other teams that maybe could use a running back or could use a running back depth. Maybe this is maybe how Kansas City fixes their running back problem. I don't know. I kind of like that fit. If you can get them, like, you know, round two or probably closer to round three for them. But just a kind of a stabilizing force back there, you know, not the most dynamic running back prospect, I don't think, out there. You know, he's not certainly not like a Saquon Barkley or a Todd Gurley type of character, but still really, really steady. And I think there's just some value in being really, really good at, you know, one style of play that happens to be really big in the NFL right now. So I'm a Caleb Johnson fan. I'll be tracking where he gets drafted pretty closely because I think in the right situation, he could have a big rookie year.
I like that Kansas City fit a lot. They do a lot of different things as a running game, which is fun and obviously makes their run game very diverse. They re-signed Kareem Hunt. Okay, I think we know that is, but like Isaiah Pacheco, yeah, right. Come on, bro. I can't believe that we spent all last season with the Chiefs being like, my God, they're playing like Kareem Hunt and Juju Smith-Schuster, and they brought those guys back. Like, I'm pretty surprised they just re-signed those guys early in free agency. Like, if you had gotten through training camp, it's like, oh, these rookies that we drafted, maybe it's not working out. Like, they just go ahead and said, yeah, we're gonna probably need those guys back for another run. Like, let's go ahead and bring Juju and Kareem Hunt and these guys back again. I can't believe they let Justin Watson get to Houston. Like, what are we going to do without Justin Watson eating all those snaps and not getting any production? So I would like to see something different from Kansas City in the run game. Pacheco is a nice player, but he's kind of a volatile runner. I feel like Caleb Johnson, like, you're consistently just hitting C pluses, B minuses in the run game, which is probably what Kansas City needs. And even like a team like Cincinnati, I mean, I know that they want to add another running back to the mix. I heard Zach Taylor say that at the combine because they don't want to have fantasy players love Chase Brown playing like 90% of the snaps. an NFL team doesn't want Chase Brown playing 90% of the snaps, and they're a very zone heavy run team as well. They need to kind of get in a world where they can marry their we've been saying this forever about the Bengals, marry their run game and their pass game maybe a little bit better. You take a guy like this maybe in the third round or something, he could be a potential option there. So I like your suggestion of Kansas City for your guy Caleb Johnson there, Charles. Last player we'll talk about, Dylan Sampson. He is another just walking, talking big play. Obviously, as we know, there's some translatable questions coming from that offense and everything, because it's the Looney Tunes Tennessee offense, Charles. We can't get through a draft season. Thankfully, I don't know if we have too many Tennessee receivers to be talking about this year, although I think they had that one guy who tore up the combine. So I'm sure there will be some sickos asking for the reception perception charts on Thompson, the Tennessee receiver?
I don't know.
Whatever.
Don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it is Thornton, excuse me. Dante Thornton Jr. Out of Tennessee. So maybe I will have to suffer through some more Tennessee Looney Tunes route concepts. Unfortunately, somebody's got to do it. But talk to me about the running back out of University of Tennessee.
Oh, Sampson's cool. Like you said, he's an explosive player. And I think the translatable reps thing is probably important here, because like you said, Tennessee, like, long story short, they spread their offense out more than any team in the country. It's like almost sometimes it feels like a bastardized version even of what Baylor used to run back when they had like RG3 and stuff like that. But they spread the field out wide as hell. They know teams know they're going to throw deep. So you get a lot of light boxes. And that is definitely going to help you, you know, rush for 22 touchdowns. It's almost 60 yards per carry on 260 carry workload over the season. But in his own right, like, he is a good player. And I think when you cut down some of the translatable stuff where, you know, they're running power against like six man boxes, or, you know, you have stuff on the goal line, even then he still looks pretty good. I think to me, this is another like running back by committee guy, super duper explosive once he gets into the open field. Sometimes I wonder like how he would fare like breaking tackles at the NFL level. But man, when he gets a runway, like, it can really, really look nice for him. And obviously when you play in an offense that runs the ball that much, that throws the ball that much, you're going to get, you know, some experience as far as working that part of the game too. So I like Sampson. I think he's a committee back, you know, like I said before, but you're getting someone who in the reps where it's looked like what you'll see on Sundays, he's looked pretty good. He's looked explosive. And you know, it's good that those things stay consistent when it's the five man box and your safeties are freaking out because they have to cover 60 yards across the field, and when it's more condensed, like what you see on Sundays.
Yeah, again, some of those translatable reps, it's more of like the inside runs for him where, like, yeah, you're not just getting to the edge on a five-man box. Like, that's never going to happen. But, like, it's actually, you got to block it up pretty well. It's more of a condensed formation, things like that, which you just don't see a lot from this offense. I see him as a guy that's more of a fit in that type of offense that's really trying to run the ball up the interior as opposed to some of these more outside zone backs that we've talked. And, again, like, maybe they're a team for one of the gap. Maybe he's one like a gap runner, like with the Chargers that we talked about, like Jacksonville, things like that. I don't know, because maybe he is more of a committee player. But shoot, if the Cardinals, who are one of the most gap heavy teams in the league, if they're like not all that jazzed with what they got out of Trey Benson last year, maybe they spend another pick on a running back because they want to run the ball so much down there in Arizona. But I like Dylan Sampson. He just is more of a, if you're watching running backs, like, you can watch one of like a full game of Caleb Johnson and get so many translatable reps. Quinshon Judkins, even, and Travion Henderson, same thing. With Sampson, you got to go diving for it a little bit more, but I think there is something there to be had with him as well. Charles, we did it.
We did.
Hell of a top. Well, kind of. Hell of a start. Yeah, I was going to say, we started. Hell of a start to this year's draft class, because I mean, we just got through six players, full evaluations. There are still a ton of guys to get to in part two. Cam Scataboo, RJ Harvey, DJ Giddens. Like, there's a lot of players in this, in this class that could become the Aaron Joneses or the Chris Carsons that we talked about in that 2017 class that maybe aren't the headliners, but could eventually be big time players in a backfield in the NFL. But That is going to do it for today's show. Charles, tell the people what you are working on, because as you mentioned at the top, you got a lot of content right now hitting the website, the podcast airwaves, everything like that.
Yeah, we have Nate and I are doing prospect profiles. So he's working on something on the quarterbacks. I just dropped something on Travis Hunter this morning. Got Abdul Carter coming tomorrow. We're going to have mock drafts, big boards. Charles Robinson and I are working on all juice team now. So, you know, just stay tuned to everything we got going over here. I'm sure you'll see me, Matt, Nate a lot. Check out the rest of the group too, with Charles Robinson, Jordy Epstein, Frank Schwab. You know, we're busting our ass over here. So please click. Please click.
I said, tell us what you're doing, and Charles, make sure you're supporting the entire team here. That's a team first guy right here. Put the C on your chest, Charles, captain of the Yahoo Sports draft coverage at this point. Like I said, that's going to do it for this show. Appreciate Charles joining. We will do part two on the running back class next week, but before we get to that, we have a ton of other things hitting the podcast feed next week. We will be back on Monday with Mock Draft Monday. We roll on with CBS Sports' Chris Trapasso. He's going to be joining the show to share his five favorite fits from his most recent mock draft. Until then, we are out.